Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
One more time, welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcand, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937. Nice to have you with us today here on this Friday, the 17th of January, 2025. And my Viking funeral from this show in this time slot. I won't be going very far. The Christian Arcand show launches on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. And I will be with you each and every night. So don't cry. Don't cry that it's over. Be happy that it happened. And also don't worry because I'm not going to be too far away either. Andy's not going anywhere. He will be holding it down here from 2 to 6 alongside Fitzy and Ted Johnson. If you have been living under a rock and this is the first time you're hearing this, I apologize with this sudden burst of information that I'm sure is a big, big deal. But anyways.
It's over.
Here we are. We got one more show to go.
Take heart with you, it says in the Twitch chat.
Okay, sure. You want to come with? You want to stay up all night?
No, not really.
No?
No.
But if I did, I'd use a Lucky Energy.
There you go. Definitely not a Celsius, because we're not allowed to drink those.
No. Yeah, stay far, far away from
those. If I see a Celsius, I'm just turning around and walking the other way. If I see one anywhere, if I see the word Celsius, if I see a Celsius thermometer up on the wall, I'm turning around, going in the other direction. I want nothing to do with any of this.
They make you angry, it seems.
It's not bad. I just don't, I mean, yeah, no one's safe. With these Celsius things around. It's like the ring in Lord of the Rings. Everyone's fighting over it.
Us here, the happy-go-lucky Lucky Energy crew, we get along, right?
It's true. We're just lucky to be here.
We don't have feuds. We don't have fights. Well,
we never have.
We did have one, and we may listen to that later.
We certainly aren't going to replay any of those over the course of the show today as we go back over what was a fun fall book, I thought. It was fun working with you, Andy.
Look at the radio guy. It was a fun fall book.
It was.
We had fun for a while.
Yeah, we had fun. It was
now
a fun time.
Over.
Fun quarter. Let's put it that way. It in corporate terms. It was a fun quarter. Anyways, that was Adam Schefter. He spoke with us the other day.
Q3.
And I wanted to start off with that because I feel like this offseason is starting off just like last year's offseason. There's been a very quick head coach search. There's now a prolonged, for some reason, we're not really sure why, offensive coordinator search. There's a bunch of people with ill-defined roles who are not really sure what they're supposed to do or how much power they have or who they're supposed to collaborate with and all that. And they have a ton of work to do on the roster. And for all the talk about how Mike Vrabel's going to come in here and start kicking ass and taking names and everything's going to be different with him and all that, the fact that the offensive coordinator search has slowed down to a crawl at this point has me concerned that we're facing a lot of the same problems that we faced in the last offseason. Now, Vrabel's probably going to be a better coach than Gerard Mayo. I think it's almost impossible for him not to be, right?
Sure.
I mean, we all agree with that. But this is sort of what my issue was, is that the ecosystem that he's coming into, it's sort of the same problem I had with drafting Drake May, is that you're bringing him into a situation that is hovering on the brink of dysfunction. I don't know if it's totally dysfunctional yet, but it's getting there. And these last couple of years have been dysfunctional. I don't know if you can just paint it all with a broad brush like that, because for 20 years, it was a well-oiled machine. So you don't just become dysfunctional overnight. 3 straight years of it, though, and then you can start asking these questions.
I don't know. When Brady left, it felt like they kind of became dysfunctional overnight.
It did. They did get back to the playoffs with a rookie quarterback, so at the very least, they had a little bounce there. But,
yeah, but they had
other than that 1 year, you're right. I mean, it's been rough.
They signed a quarterback in July, and Bill's bitching. I mean, it would have given more than $1 million. Reset the salary cap.
Right.
He was ranting and raving. And then from then on, I don't even know if that was a success or a failure, because it depends who you ask about Mac Jones, how they drafted him, who drafted him, who wanted him, who didn't want him. If Bill wanted him, he would have traded up for him. He stayed put. And then he said, does everybody agree? And he created this dog and pony show for a Patriots.com video. It felt like it kind of got dysfunctional when Tom Brady went out the door.
Yeah.
He was the glue. I'm not saying he gets all the credit, but he was the glue that held it together, because they went off the rails pretty damn quickly and pretty damn dramatically.
So why would you say he doesn't get all the credit then if it went off the rails when he left?
Because
all the other people are still here, so.
I guess you could make that argument. I just look at it in a more, like, that was circumstantial that it went off the rails like that. Because I do think some of it is they got old and cranky.
Mm.
And I always use the example of, like, the toilet seat that you leave up and your wife gets mad, but she doesn't really care when she loves you. And then when you're close to divorce, she's screaming about it.
Yeah.
You didn't change anything. You've been leaving the toilet seat up for 20 years.
True.
She decided to view it differently and voice it differently and air the grievance differently.
And you reached the breaking point. All that's true. I think that happened between Bill and Brady. I think that happened between Bill and Kraft.
Yep.
I think that happened between all the people involved, really.
Absolutely.
So that makes sense. But when Brady left,
it fell apart.
It fell apart.
Absolutely.
And he succeeded elsewhere.
And that's why everybody said he was the Band-Aid or the ultimate fixer or the duct tape that held it all together. That.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, fast forward to now. I'm going to tell you why this is totally different than last year.
Okay.
Because last year, when they had a bag job hiring of a former all-pro linebacker for head coach.
Which was totally different.
No. We didn't get to the different part yet. That's the same part. They had no idea what to do after that. That's why it got weird. It went sideways. You had a lack of leadership, and people were filling that vacuum. And people are wondering about Robin Glazer and Elliot Wolf and Matt and that whole thing. Forget it. Now we have the Vrabes is the man era.
Right.
And I think McDaniels is the man era. Last year, interview. He doesn't want it. He wants too much money. AVP, you said yes, you would take the job. Oh, job is yours. Let's move forward then. This year, it feels to me, and I go back to Schefter the other day. Yeah, Adam, can you handicap the Patriots offensive coordinator search? Well, you know, one name that would seem to make sense is Josh McDaniels. Thanks. You got any others? Because I can do that. We've been doing that. We may have started that. I think you did. And Schefter was like, a couple weeks ago we brought up McDaniels.
You brought up McDaniels before anybody else.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'll give
you credit for that. I don't give you credit for much, but I'll give you credit for that.
And
100%.
Weeks later, Schefter's only bringing up McDaniels.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy that, even if he was trying to do them a solid to pretend it's not a bag job, wouldn't he bring up, Wes Phillips, Josh McDaniels, anybody?
Yeah.
He didn't throw a single name in there other than Josh McDaniels. So I just think this is another, you know, show where they got in trouble. You know, my guess is somebody, I don't know how that works, somebody from the league probably talked to somebody from the team about the whole Byron Leftwich, Pep Hamilton thing.
Sure.
Whether it's official, unofficial, like, why are you guys going to do that?
There was a talking to, I would imagine.
Sure, yeah. I don't know at what level. I don't know if it's at liaison level, craft level, somewhere in between, whatever. So now it's like, okay, so we won't do that. We can pause. For all we know, Josh McDaniels has worked at the stadium hall every day this week. Right? He could be in there.
Could be there.
He lives here. The guy on Jones and Keefe sees him get his paper every morning. So he gets his paper and he drives to Gillette and he starts the work there. We have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to check. I went back in their social media. They've had like nothing. They post their podcasts and 17 different ways.
Are you talking about the Jones and Keefe social media?
No. Sorry. Patriots.
Patriots social media.
Because I didn't know if we would get
they don't post anything.
The announcements. And all it is 17 different repackagings of Mike Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
Hired pictures, cool pictures, shot of this, shot of that, backdrop, everything.
Fit of the day.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
And they've just sort of ridden that train. So I think it's just all quiet.
Familiar face, familiar place.
Absolutely. The one
and
that
then
was.
And there's Drake in the getting engaged.
Drake getting engaged and tap and download in 4K, Drake, because everybody has to do that these days.
Coach Vrabel settling in.
Yeah, there's nothing
the
there.
HC. One-on-one with Mike Vrabel. It's true. It's all Mike Vrabel posts.
So
that's all it is.
My guess is maybe for the first edition of Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson next Tuesday, we'll have an offensive coordinator because they'll feel like they waited long enough. Oh, it's a weekend, a day, holiday weekend. Now we can announce.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the big difference. I think they know exactly who they want as the coordinator. I think the, how did Schefter phrase it? I know it was an easy contract because basically the Raiders are going to pay him all the money. And
right.
10 cents on the dollar or whatever.
It'll
it is.
Be agreeable. It's,
So you think this
is all in the bag.
It's the opposite of last year where they couldn't find anybody.
Okay.
They had one person, they found him right away, and they're done.
So they're dragging it out just to not look like a-holes is what you're saying.
Racists.
Well,
that's what they're avoiding looking. Like,
they got to interview the people first
Keefe,
if they want to do that.
Keefe said it yesterday. Why can't we put out the coordinator interviews? And as Keefe said, what if they're all white? You got to play the game the way the league wants you to play it.
Sure.
Sorry, Schefter doesn't like it. I don't like it. No one likes it, but you got to do it.
Okay. What about the rest of the comparisons I made? As in the ill-defined roles, the fact that it was a very bag job head coach search, which we've talked about, sure.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's coming in here now and there's still a lot of the same people and the roles are still kind of sketchy and all of that, I think that's problematic.
So two answers to that. A, I don't know if they're ill-defined. This feels a little Belichickian. Oh, we don't know who's calling plays. We don't know, is this guy the coordinator or is not? Is that guy calling plays? We went through that for various points of 20 years.
Yeah.
And Bill loved it. Bill ate it up. Remember when the whole Patricia thing and he was like, well, you know, the play call is one thing, but there's other aspects to the job leading up to the play call and how that's put together, blah, right. blah, 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 blah. Talked out of every side of his mouth that he could find. So there's that. But also, I don't think when you have a clear leader, the roles below it don't really matter because that leader will slap those people into place if they think they're out of place, right? And I think Mike Vrabel is the clear leader. Last year, there was no clear leader. Whether it was by design of the organization or failure of the organization or by failure for him to take charge, Gerard Mayo never took the bull by the horns. There was too much vagary. There was too much, I'd like to think as the head coach, I decide who plays. No, you should just say, I'm the head coach. I decide who plays.
Yeah.
You phrase that differently and we interpret it differently. So from this point last year, straight through really the bulk of the season, actually, you know when he sounded really authoritative? I'm the head coach of this football team, and I'll always try to win.
Yeah.
And Robert was like, yeah, and I asked you not to, so get the hell out.
Yep, that's enough out of you.
That was the first time he sounded really authoritative.
It's kind of true.
And it cost him his job.
It's kind of true. A lot of things, I think, cost him the job. But
yeah, that was the final
That was
nail.
Certainly a big part of it. So if he's the man, if Vrabel's the man, and he's the one who's going to be in charge of all of these things, are the Crafts going back on what they did when they brought in Mayo and wanted to take their team back and not have it be just one dictator telling everybody what's what?
A little bit. Well, I think the pendulum went too far. There was an overreaction to the Belichick years. But also remember, that pendulum started to swing in the Matt Groh, we're going to be collaborative and Matt Groh's going to be the point man on the draft and all of those things. So it's not just really a one-year failure.
Right.
They kind of had a 3-4-year failure of the post-dictatorial Belichickian ways at the end. And I do think we did it the other day. Is there a Hardo? Is there a dictator on most teams? Yes, there has to be. It's very simple. I know people get a little squirrely when you compare military and football. It's not real bullets. They're not flying. But
who is the guy who was like, I'm a soldier? Remember that?
Winslow.
Winslow,
the younger Winslow.
Right, before
who
he got caught.
Freaked out.
Before he got caught doing all the stuff he was doing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. To himself. And
bad
like,
guy, yeah.
Didn't he like old women or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a bad dude.
Bad guy.
But football, you have to have a hierarchy in leadership.
I like how he just compared all those things like they're the same. Yeah. All the things that he did and also being like, I'm a soldier. Like, yeah. The other things he did were way worse.
Way worse.
Yeah, worse than that. But I do remember him doing that.
But there is a certain truth to that, that people need to know where they are in line. And I think if the third person isn't sure if he's the third or the fourth, okay, you can figure that out.
Yeah.
But if the first and the second people don't know who's actually the first and who's the second, then you have problems. And I think that was last year. No one knew who was in charge. And that doesn't even take into account, was Robin Glazer in the periphery of power for a little while? And we don't need to get into whether she's still there, she's not there. I can tell you that she was there Monday when I was at the press conference, sitting there, second row. She was definitely still there. Whether she's still there today.
Is on behalf of the Patriot, not just the Kraft Group, right? I mean, seeing because that was a Patriots event.
Oh, yeah. No. And whether she's actually still employed, I mean, I had heard rumblings that people were wondering if she would resign, like that it didn't work. She kind of shot her shot for a bigger role in football and it with Gerard and it didn't work then. Remember, I had even told you I'd heard a couple months ago that when Bill started bringing her name up, she wasn't really involved.
Right.
Like after the hiring of coordinators and after the hire, some of the stuff last offseason, she didn't have a big role. So I don't think she's going to have any role moving forward with Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, makes sense.
Whether she's there or not. She could be in the building. I don't think she's having a role with Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, and it was, I think Curran yesterday was telling us she's like a contract person. That's mostly what she does is she's there for contracts and things like that and is someone who's around the office and never really had as much of a big role as we thought. It was just...
She had a hammer.
It was one of those things that Belichick keeps bringing her up.
Because
right?
He likes to poke people. It's
right.
Poking. Same reason he praised Mike Vrabel so hard.
Yeah.
It's true, but it also pokes Mayo and the Crafts.
Yes, but I also think that there was maybe a little bit of meddling going on there or her representing the Crafts and trying to obstruct whatever he was trying to do, that type of thing. You know, like I wouldn't be surprised.
Or
I don't think he'd just bring her up like that for no reason.
She also represented, I think, a lightning rod of criticism for the post-Belichick power structure.
Yeah.
Oh, so we're going to bring this person in and this person in, and I'm not even going to make it sexist or anything like that. I'm just saying bringing in all these non-football people. You hear this in every organization.
Yeah.
The geek who came up through the salary cap department, now he's the GM. What the hell does he know about football scouting?
The econ major from Princeton. Right. Who was,
right. In Cleveland, they had it. Remember they brought in Podesta?
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, so we're going to bring in a baseball guy to run a football team? Like, the old school football
Weird
guys.
That didn't work.
Right. But the old school football guys, that pisses them off, as it should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Bill only sees it when he's pissed off they bring in a baseball guy. Bill doesn't care that he brings a defensive guy to offense. He think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, probably. The Patriots now have not been good for about 5 years, as we said, with that 1 year where they made the playoffs, notwithstanding. And I was going back over some of the teams that had long stretches of being bad, like your Clevelands and Detroits and the Jets right now and sort of things like that, and what they all kind of had in common. And one thing is that they all had a stretch of really bad drafts, like bad draft. Cleveland in particular. I was going over Cleveland's drafts in like the early 2000s. Tim Couch, Courtney Brown, Trent Richardson, like just brutal, brutal draft.
Richardson.
With the top one, two, three picks.
He was like third, I think.
Yeah.
Running back.
I mean, they whiffed on every single one except Joe Thomas, basically. Joe Thomas was one of the only good picks they ever made. And this was year after year after year. They're picking high. Danny Shelton was a first-round pick for them.
Oh, yeah?
Not that long ago. 2015, he was picked 12th overall. They could not have drafted worse. And you look at the Patriots lately, and they've been drafting very poorly, too, with the exception of Drake May. Now, that's the thing, is these teams whiffed on quarterbacks. The Jets whiffed on a bunch of them. They whiffed on Sanchez. They whiffed on
Wilson.
Wilson. They whiffed on a whole bunch of them. So, I mean, that's part of it. Detroit, when they had their draft, they kept trying to draft wide receivers. You remember in the Millen era?
Yep.
It was Roy Williams and Charles Rogers and, like, all Mike Williams. And they weren't bad. Rogers was bad. But they weren't all terrible. It's just they couldn't quite put it together with John Kitten there, whoever the QB happened to be, and they were mixing and matching guys like that. The Patriots are in sort of a weird limbo between drafting poorly, which they have, but also having hit on two guys that could be, and I think are on the way to being cornerstone players. So they're not quite as bad as some of these teams, but they're getting close. And I think that when you look at prolonged eras of sucking, which is what it is with these teams, the Patriots are kind of close to that. They're kind of close to being one of those teams. They have to draft their way out of it, and I'm not sure that they have the wherewithal to do it.
100%, and I think Robert has said this a lot of times. Even when he was talking about the 2021 spending, and it's always back to the draft, and this really isn't the way we want to do it, but when you don't draft well, you kind of have to try to make up for it in some form or fashion. And right now, they could be on the cusp of some. If they can get one draft that's deep, then we will clump May and Gonzo in.
Yeah.
But right now, they're sort of outlier star players.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody to clump together. It's like the 2021 draft at first looked like a home run.
Yeah.
You had Mac Jones and Christian Barmore. It's like, holy crap, I might have got the best player on my offense
and
my
back.
Defense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And then hindsight petered out. Like, I know Barmore's still here and you re-signed him, but that doesn't look as good. Even Stevenson. It's like, what is he now? Do you really feel great about him?
No.
Not great about him? No, I wouldn't
I
either.
Felt good about him as a 2 to 3 year guy like I did with Damian Harris and with Sony Michel. And Michel was way overdrafted. But you know what I mean? Like that type of guy, you know, you draft
and move
him.
On.
And then you go on to the next guy.
And now he's
Instead
your mainstay.
They re-signed Ramondre Stevenson. That's exactly the opposite of the type of thing Bill used to do.
But they need a home run draft.
Yeah.
And because last year, it looks like I know Laydon Robinson's an all-rookie team guy because he had a few good snaps or whatever. But
right, but he's also, according to PFF, one of the worst guards in the league. So
I saw more of that.
Yeah.
I saw a little more of that than the few good snaps that made him all-rookie.
There just weren't a lot of rookie left guards is the problem.
And that's the pressure that's on. This is a good question. Who is the pressure really on? It's year one Vrabes, and Vrabes is the man.
Right.
But is it on him or Elliott Wolf?
I mean, I think it's got to be on Vrabel now.
I think so, too.
He
and
walks
that's weird.
In, and it's all of a sudden, he's the man. Then, all right, you're the man. Then he said, I'll take the blame.
But
right? He said that to Tom Curran.
But part of the reason Elliott Wolf is here, and Tom Curran clarified this, I think, with the investment of time. They changed the scouting grades, taught how Elliott wants them scouted. So aren't we really in kind of year one or one and a half of Elliott Wolf's system in New England?
Mm.
But I think it's now on Vrabes' shoulders. And I do think he's the spotlight. It's what I ranted to you the other day. I love this now. If they draft well, I'm giving Vrabel credit. Sorry, Elliott. If they draft poorly, I'm giving Vrabel the blame because he is the point man on everything they do. He has final say on the roster, we believe. I think that's now the perception thanks to Curran and Schefter and everybody else. So that's a lot of pressure when he's leaning on Elliot Wolf's information, organization, grading system, whatever it is. Or it's a lot of pressure on, like, Ryan Cowden to kind of blend it, right? He's probably the weird intermediary.
Yeah.
Bringing Vrabel, because Vrabel's not always going to be there. Mm-hmm. Cowden's always going to be in personnel.
Right.
But he has Vrabel in mind, melding that with Elliot Wolf's system. Maybe he's the most important guy.
Yeah, certainly
sneaky
could be.
Sneaky hot take, Ryan Cowden, most important man in Gillette Stadium.
He'll be the fall guy if it doesn't go right to start off, I'll tell you that, because people are going to give Vrabel chances. They're going to give him chances. They like Mike Vrabel. They like him more than they liked Mayo, and he's got a better resume. So it's not going to immediately be, if something goes wrong, oh, Vrabel screwed it up. It's, well, Vrabel knows what he's doing. He had that run over in Tennessee. It must be these other guys. So you got to be careful with that. That's going to be an interesting thing, because I don't think it's going to go super smoothly here. In this first year, the team just has so much work to do to get their way out of this this hole that they're in. 617-779-7937. One way to get out of that hole is to get some talent. And Mike Vrabel is talking about A.J. Brown, his old buddy A.J. Brown he had in Tennessee. He's going to be playing this weekend in the division round with the Eagles. And, well, Vrabel would love to have him on the Patriots. So would I. So would all of us. We'll get to that with your phone calls right after Dan Ball. Get you caught up on what's trending. Mike Vrabel with the Greg Hill Show, that was, yes? Talking about his buddy A.J. Brown, avid reader A.J. Brown, who will be in action this weekend as the Eagles take on the Commanders now. They take on the Rams. Excuse me, that's right, the Rams. Which I think is going to be a great game, by the way. I think the Rams
weather-related.
The Rams are a scary team. That is a team I would, if I was still in the, my team was still in the playoffs, I would not want to face them.
I would agree, but I want to look at the weather.
Supposed to be an ugly one in Philly, huh?
I think Philly's going to have some weather. I mean, Buffalo is going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Feels less than zero, snow everywhere. But
game time weather, it says 32 degrees, and I see a little snowflake. Ah, could be fun. Could be fun. Yes. I like snow games.
So that's Philly?
That is the Philly game,
yeah.
Yes.
That, I don't feel great about Matthew Stafford, a career domer, and that offense necessarily thriving in Philly, even though Philly, I think, is beatable.
Mm.
I like, if that were a neutral site dome or something, you move that to the Superdome.
Yeah.
I think I might be picking the Rams for the upset, but the weather is a concern there.
Yeah, weather, running the ball, that favors the Eagles. I like Kyron Williams, but Barkley's obviously the guy you want out
Stud.
There for something like that.
The
no question
push.
About it.
But we did tush push last week. I know we might get into this later, but the fake tush push where they went deep and A.J. Brown was wide open and Jalen Hurts missed him by like 5 yards.
Air-mailed him, yeah.
That was now I know why I needed to go find his center again. I'd be pissed.
Yeah. Didn't want to play that to talk about division weekend specifically, but because there is still now this little matter of the offseason here for the Patriots. A.J. Brown is a guy who may be available in a trade. He may not. I know there was some issues with him and the Eagles and their new contract, but he ended up signing one, right?
He did, yeah.
So maybe that's a tradable contract. We'll see what happens. Probably depends on how far the Eagles go in the playoffs, depending on what they want to do with their guys and their team. I would be ripped if I was an Eagles fan and they ended up trading Brown in the offseason, because that is a very high-powered offense and you don't want to give away your offense. But if that was the case and the Patriots were to make a move for him, I think that would be great. There's other guys that I think that way of, and Phil Perry had his top five guys that he wants in the offseason, and he has some free agent signings, a trade, and a draft pick. So let's go do the exercise right now. Let's do three free agents, one trade, and one draft pick. So the fourth overall pick, or if you want to trade back and there's somebody else you have in your mind, mind that goes top 10 or wherever it is, then include that. One person you trade for and three free agents.
So the draft pick, I'm starting to lean towards Abdul Carter.
Mm-hmm.
We had a weird text the other day. It was like, did you see him against Notre Dame? He was terrible. And I was like, excuse me?
He was not terrible.
He played with one arm and was still awesome.
He was very disruptive in that game.
He is really good. Mm-hmm. I actually think he's a better pass rusher coming from Penn State than Micah Parsons was at Penn State. He's a better pure edge rusher. Now,
I don't know if I go that far, but I do think he's very, very good.
I think he's a far more polished. Like, I would love to see him enter the conversation with Gonzo and pair them up. And then if Barmore comes back, now you're starting to put the pillars. So that means I got to get my tackle somewhere else later. Whatever. What was next on my list? My free agency?
Free agents and one trade you'd make.
I mean, free agents, I still have the pie-in-the-sky dream that I can convince T. Higgins that $150 million or whatever is going to get him here. The next free agent on my list, speaking of edge guys, there was weird talk out of it, but I'm going with it. He's going to be a free agent. Khalil Mack is a veteran
still good defensive player. If I put Abdul Carter and Khalil Mack on opposite ends of the line of scrimmage with Christian Barmore in the middle and Gonzo in the back and hopefully a resurgent Kyle Duggar, I feel like suddenly I'm putting together a defense. Oh, I forgot to tell you, Mike Vrabel's coaching them. He knows a little something about defense. I like that idea. And then this is a much lesser free agent, but Najee Harris. I need to have somebody to give the ball to, because I do think Vrabel is going to be run the ball, play defense, we'll fix the line good enough so we can run block kind of situation. And I can't count on Ramondre Stevenson. I know you just signed him, but I can't count on him. I can't get rid of him either. I don't think you can just totally move on from him. So give me another veteran back. I know some people use the draft pick. They dream of Scataboo being that guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can pair up Scataboo in the mid rounds with Stevenson and that gives you a guy, blah, blah, blah. Maybe. That's an interesting theory. And then trade idea. I'm still going to go with this. I know it's stupid and I know it'll never happen, but this is radio. This isn't the real world.
True.
Garrett Wilson.
Okay.
I want Garrett Wilson. And I think at some point he's going to definitively want out of New York and be like, I'm done here.
Start over with a new quarterback. Yeah. I mean,
like, what am I doing?
Someone who sucks. Like
What am I doing? Or even young and it's not like his timeline. He wants to speed up his timeline.
Right.
And I'm not saying the Patriots are necessarily the answer to speed up his timeline. Cause well, they're still a young, developing team. But Garrett Wilson, I would trade for Garrett Wilson.
Okay. That's all very good. I think that would be fine if that's what you ended up doing. Phil Perry's was similar to yours. Phil Perry, his five guys are sign T. Higgins, sign Ronnie Stanley, sign Josh Sweat, the edge rusher from the Eagles.
Him.
Not a huge fan of his. And he had kind of a schmeh year this year. He's been good. I mean, he's young, but I don't know. I'd shoot a little higher, I guess. I'd rather Khalil Mack, or there's a couple other names I like, too. He'd trade for Zach Tom, who is the Green Bay Packers' right tackle, and he would draft Abdul Carter. That's a big upgrade at wide receiver. Two new tackles and two new pass rushers. I like that. I mean, I think that's pretty good. Yours was a wide receiver.
A running back.
Pass rush, no offensive line, right?
No, I don't know how I'm fixing that. I'm not going to lie. I mean, we had a texter, Kelvin Banks. Like, yeah, he's going to be in consideration at four. I just don't know how good he is. I want to be excited about the number four pick, not because of the position they play, but because I watch them and go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Travis Hunter. I can watch him and say, oh, my God. Maybe you could even say McMillan. We had some people yesterday, or there was a mock draft for McMillan.
Right.
Can I, a big long receiver like that, you can get me excited about that. A questionable left tackle at four scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's a scary proposition. My free agents, I would sign Cam Robinson, and I would sign Joe Noteboom. Both of those guys are going to be free agents. I don't know. They may end up getting re-signed. Yeah. The Rams and the Vikings are the two teams that they play for. A couple of tackles there. Noteboom's kind of a swing tackle. Robinson's a left. I'd say they're probably under 30 the best tackles that are out there, and I think that may raise the price, but you have all this money. You might as well go out and spend it, and I say go overboard in trying to bring in a guy like that. I would trade for my wide receiver. I think T. Higgins is probably going to sign elsewhere. If you trade for a wide receiver, more likely to get him. I would trade for a guy like, D.K. Metcalf.
Okay, I'll take him.
If you could get him, that would be nice. I would draft McMillan. I'd get two wide receivers in there, and then I would trade for an edge rusher, and you could go a couple different directions with that. I think that there's a few edge rushers out there that are on teams that maybe they're not super happy with. I think even a team like Houston, they got those two guys. What would it take to pry one of them out of there? You know, like, you're going to have to pay both of those guys. They're going to demand big money. Eventually, Houston's going to have to look at it and say, okay, you know, both the Hunter and Anderson?
Will
both
Anderson.
Of those guys are great.
Will Anderson's what? Second year?
Second or third year?
I think second.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because
he was in the Stroud year, right.
Yeah.
So maybe Hunter shakes free or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, that's the type of thing I'd be looking at, though. Teams with two good edge rushers, try and trade for one of them, and that would be the way I'd do it. But I would draft wide receiver. I would trade for wide receiver. And for my free agents, I'd go nuts with that, with an offensive lineman, an edge rusher if you can. There's a couple of good ones who are coming outside of Josh Sweat and Judon and some of those guys. Khalil Mack, you mentioned. DeMarcus Lawrence, who's getting up there, but he's still effective. How do you feel about a guy like Chase Young?
No.
Seemed like a real stud, and then
just
tapered
hasn't
right
been.
Off. Yeah.
He's become the modern, like, Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
Just kind of I'm not saying he's not good or doesn't have ability, but he's not the
elite stud impact change your team kind of defensive player that he was supposed to be coming out of college. The one question I would have, so I'm intrigued by DK Metcalf and McMillan.
Mm-hmm.
With Douglas, that gives you the, because those guys are both kind of outside, long strider.
Big body
big.
Guys. Yeah.
I just wonder how they fit together. But if you have two of those and you have Pop Douglas and then you throw in a Hunter Henry, I'd like to see how it would work.
Yeah, I'd like to see it too.
I'd like to see what Josh could do with that.
They're not big lumbering guys either. Like Metcalf's fast.
Metcalf's one of the fastest players probably on the planet.
Yeah, although I feel like he had, kind of a down year.
He did, and he's kind of a dink.
Is he?
They all, I mean,
what
no, I mean, wide receiver dink.
Oh.
Like I think A.J. Brown right now, he was reading that book to prevent from being dinky. Right, I think that's what Vrabel's telling you that. Right, these guys are all mercurial diva. It's a weird position, but it's. I always said this about pass rushers because remember when Julius Peppers was supposed to come here and he was like the stud in Carolina.
Well, he was franchised supposed to come here.
Oh yeah, he was traded here. It was reported Julius Peppers was traded to the.
I don't
Patriots.
Remember this at all.
He was franchised and somebody reported it and then it fell through and it couldn't even really happen. But it was a NFL. I think NFL.com reported it.
Wow.
That he was being traded to the Patriots. But
I don't remember any of that. Do you guys remember that back there? Stiz definitely.
No chance Stiz
remembers. Like, of course I remember
Who's
that.
Julius Peppers?
He's like, I think about it every day. It's my Roman Empire. That's the main thing
Stiz,
I always think
you know where
about.
Julius Peppers went to school, though, a place where you do care about now.
UNC.
That is correct.
Did you guess that or knew that?
I knew. Come on, Andy.
He knew it. This guy is Mr. Football.
What sport did Julius Peppers play at UNC?
Hey, look over there, a bird. Basketball, I think.
You're right. He played basketball and football.
There we go.
Amazing. I told you. This guy's a genius.
That.
You giving him the answers, Ball?
You didn't? I didn't say a word.
I didn't say a word.
Did you hear anybody say anything?
No, I didn't think you did because I figured I'd
hear it. I didn't see Dan talking. I don't know. Maybe he did, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm not that good on my ventriloquist act that I can make him say that.
Anyway.
Very good.
My point was, I think you need some of those truly elite players that people question their attitude, their motor. Like, you can't be nitpicking, I guess, is my point. Because you could push Tyreek Hill. Everybody pushes back on Tyreek Hill. Okay, let's see if we can figure it out.
Yeah.
You need elite talent. You need That's another one you could throw in. I know that supposedly
Tyreek
they
Hill?
Squashed there. How about, under your scenario, swapping Tyreek Hill for one of those guys, and then you can do something else?
Metcalf instead of, or Hill instead of Metcalf?
Because he's more of a catch and run, different, shifty, quick.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I do not want Tyreek Hill.
Why?
Because he's a dink.
I know. I just said we need dinks.
He's also a bad guy. You know, like,
that's what I'm saying.
I understand, like, not wanting him for those reasons. I get that. And I don't know if he's paid his debt to society or whatever it is. But I mean,
he has a lot of smoke with his
He's got issues.
Remember
there,
he went on like a fishing trip and, like, beat the guy or something?
Yeah, he beat up, like, the guy in the marina.
The charter guy
right.
or something.
And he's also wasn't very good this past year.
No, he was not.
Banged up. He's, you know, these
Less
older
than
guys.
1,000 yards.
The little fast guys, when they get older, they fall off. I told you, Mr. Football Radio.
He's like suddenly giving stats.
Now he knows. He knows everything.
Players.
Stiz the stat back there. 617-779-7937. We're going to take a quick football break. When we come back, the Red Sox have finally come to their senses, much like Andy Hart, and they have gotten Jaron Duran. That deal is done. They're going to avoid an arbitration hearing. Thank goodness. What's next? Also, we'll hear from Corbin Burns, who detailed his pursuit, or the pursuit from him with the Red Sox.
There was no pursuit.
There really wasn't. We'll get to that next.
Guy sounds pretty good. They should probably pay him, and they did.
The Red Sox got their head out of their collective asses finally and paid Jaron Duran. It's a one-year deal, $3.85 million, including a club option for $8 million in 2026. The deal avoids an arbitration hearing where the Red Sox have filed at 3.5 and Duran at 4.
So I have a question on
which
that.
Means they split the baby. They didn't even give him the $4 million.
Oh, yeah, no, they split it. They did the traditional, you want this, I want this, we'll meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But the $8 million club option.
Yes.
I'm not smart enough to know this. Is that more or less than he likely would have gotten in arbitration next year?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
You know what I mean? Like, did they...
Yeah.
Did he screw himself? Could he have gotten $10 million? Because these... Your arbitrations do go up pretty fast. It seems like that because...
I don't know what the next level is, but yeah, I do know it goes up.
But that was the first thing I wondered. Did they screw him? Give it... Okay, we'll give you $250, but we're going to screw you next year kind of thing. And why did he sign it if that's the case?
Right. Good point.
Did he really need the $500K?
I don't know.
I mean, I would take $500K.
I would take it, certainly. I don't understand why they were withholding it to begin with. But they do have a deal done. This sort of thing, the fact that it even came up at all, I don't think is necessarily a great gesture of good faith between the two sides. I think that that was a reasonable ask by Duran and kind of an unreasonable ball busting from the Red Sox, which didn't even fully get finished. You know, like it's still kind of hanging out there. So I wonder how the relationship is between the player and the team right now. I wonder if the team even particularly cares about that, considering that they have outfielders coming up through the minors and maybe even on the team this year. So we'll see how this all goes. But Duran going to be here this year, going to have an option for next year. I'd like to see him stick around. He's probably their best player, so I think that's good to finally get that done. And I would normally say, you know, good on Duran for making this concession, but I also kind of feel like you don't want to go to an arbitration hearing. I understand that, because you never want to have all the people, your bosses all telling you why you shouldn't be making more money. But also, part of me thinks, yeah, well, if you really value me this little and you want to make this, you're so stuck on this $500,000, then let's go ahead and do this. You know, let's go sit in the room, and you know what? You want to tell me why you don't think me, your best player, should be getting an extra $500,000? Fine, let's do it, and let's have that out there on the record.
Do you think, somebody brought this up yesterday, do you think the words in that hearing, had they gone to a hearing, is it just baseball, or would the words homophobic slur have come up in that hearing?
I would imagine that's coming up, yeah. I mean, right? if you're thinking about any reason to bring something up, that's got to be it, because baseball-wise, there isn't one, especially if you're paying guys like Houck and Crawford and, you know, everybody else who was up for ARB and not really having any problems and not going to any hearings with them. That's got to be it, right?
Okay,
there's no baseball reasons.
That's a reason for me as Duran to not want to go.
Maybe his age. Maybe his age.
Yeah, I mean, other things would come up, but if that comes up, I don't really want to sit in a room with whoever's there, the Red Sox, the arbiter, these different people, and they're, you know, analyzing the audio, playing it real loud. Does this say what we think? That would be something I wouldn't want to go through. The baseball stuff, I agree with you. Once you were haggling with me, all right, you've already made your side clear. Let's do this. Let's go all in now. I'd be all for that, but I'm not sure I'd want the personal attack that could come with that type of thing.
Sure, and I think there's always room to interpret those things the way you want to. Well, just because I said that means I deserve less money, or does it have to do with my production on the field? And I did apologize, and I did sort of, you know, did my penance there. I admitted I made a mistake. All that stuff, like, that could be an example of how much I've grown as a person, and I would never do anything like that again. And by the way, I came back and kicked ass the whole rest of the year, even after that happened.
That's why I don't think financially the homophobic slur should have no bearing.
Like, I kind of agree.
It's like we got a lot of texters. I brought up Tyreek Hill last segment. I don't want Tyreek Hill. Okay, if you don't want him, but what if I say Tyreek Hill would come here for $1 million? Oh, I think he's a bad guy, but did you say for just a minute? You know what I mean? Like, there shouldn't be a price on your moral compass of what you want on your team. Mm-hmm. If you don't think that was appropriate and you think Jaren Duran is what he said, then get rid of him.
Right.
It shouldn't be like, I'm going to dock you $500 for being a bad person.
Yeah.
But you better keep hitting.
The a-hole tax.
Yeah, like, it's weird.
It is. I also think that if Duran had been defiant about it or doubled down or said, you know, you guys are just trying to cancel me and blah, 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 whatever that people do when they get caught for saying something bad, like the wrong way to handle it, that's what I think anyway, then maybe we'd be having a different... He apologized.
Right.
He came out and apologized. I believe
him.
Served
his suspension.
He was suspended, and I haven't heard him say anything like that since. I think he knew he screwed up. I don't think that he's a bad guy. You know, I don't think so. And I could be wrong, but that's sort of how I look at it. Now, maybe they think differently. They know him better than I do. And maybe that's why this is all very hesitant. And
if you know him that well,
to commit, but you also just went out and signed, gave money to Aroldis Chapman. Right? Is he worse than Aroldis Chapman? Because you just paid him.
And you probably don't know as well.
Right.
Right. Like, there's definitely baggage there that you chose to acquire, to bring in, having less information likely than you have on Duran, who you've had in your building for a long time now.
Yes. So there's that. There's also this. Corbin Burnes talked to Sports Illustrated about his free agent process and what it was like. And there was a bunch of Red Sox related stuff in here. So Scott Boras is his agent, and he was talking with Tom Verducci. And this is how it starts. He said, we had three or four teams reach out, and it's kind of weird how they came in groups, Burnes told Verducci. Like, we went from nowhere to these three teams in a day, and then, okay, nothing for another week. And then all of a sudden, four teams reached out in a matter of 2 days. So it's just strange how the ebb and flow of the market goes. Burnes had a good idea of which teams had money to spend and what teams needed help in the rotation and where teams were in the arc of winning. Are you coming off a rebuild? Are they going into a rebuild? Just that kind of thing. And obviously you want to be in a spot where you're competing every year. You don't want to be in a year where it's, hey, you're going in knowing you're only going to win 70 games. That's kind of a big thing. And after that, it was digging into organizations and how they treat families. Here's where he needed help. Corbin and his wife leaned on other players, especially fellow Boris clients, to gather behind-the-scenes info about family issues. That's when the phone calls happened, he says. The way me and Brooke did it, Brooke's his wife, was basically looking at how would family life be? Is it going to be easy or is it going to be tough? It does get more important going from 1 to 3 kids. You have the more kids. In the next few days, he met with the Yankees and the Red Sox officials over Zoom. It went well, he says, of the call with New York. It did, but it didn't really progress much past that. We were told that they were looking for a lefty, and I think once they got going with Max Fried, it became serious there. It looked like that's the route they were going down. Same with Boston. They were looking for a lefty.
Crochet.
Interesting. Burns had 2 offers by December 22nd, one from the Blue Jays, one from the Giants. Boris continued to preach patience. Unless you're going into negotiations and see paper offers, it gets real, Burns says, and then maybe it doesn't sound as good as it did on the phone when teams start looking at deferrals and that kind of thing. So we had 2 offers, but nothing was quite that's it. It was Toronto. It was San Francisco. There was verbal stuff with Baltimore and Boston, but nothing I had seen in writing. So if you thought that the Red Sox were serious about Corbin Burns, it sounds like they were not.
No.
Sounds like at no point in this process were they ever serious about Corbin Burns, who I think was the best pitcher out on the free agent market this year, and who I think is going to be a stud with the Diamondbacks, and who I think would have been a great Boston Red Sox.
And it sounds like he never thought they were serious.
Right.
Because he never saw a real offer.
Mm-hmm.
Actual on-paper offer. There's a lot of talking, obviously, that goes along in free agency and business in general. And this is just another example.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't in on him. Did they show interest?
They were interested, yeah.
You made a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you call about different things. How many times have you looked at something on, like, Facebook Marketplace? Didn't mean you went to go buy an offer.
Right.
You looked at it. You scrolled. Oh, I wonder what's on there right now. I'm sure Rich Keefe for his dork pod searches all kinds of crazy things.
Sure.
All over the internet. They weren't really deep in on him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it was as simple as they wanted Crochet and that was the plan all along.
Right.
And my question there would be, why? If you just think Crochet's better, better long-term, better...
I think Crochet's probably better than Burns, but you could have them both.
You absolutely could have them both. Remember when we started the offseason thinking we might get 2 arms and a bat?
Yeah.
What'd we get so far?
We got one arm, a bullpen arm.
Mm.
You got a bullpen arm. Chapman's a bullpen arm.
No, I know, but when I say 2 arms and a bat, I mean like we were going to be excited about
it. Right.
No one's excited about Chapman.
It's true.
Yes, he has an arm, and he'll use it to throw a ball, and he'll come out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Mason Miller would be an arm in the bullpen that you got.
So Buehler's an arm.
I guess.
Recently broken arm. Same with Sandoval.
They got a million recently broken arms.
They got 1 real arm. They got an arm that everybody hates and is a bad dude. And 2 broken or recently broken
arms. All the arms have Tommy John scars on them.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
No, like, it's true. Yeah.
They got
my
a couple
point.
Of science projects is what they got.
And we're still waiting on the bat.
Yep.
So we got 1 arm.
1 arm.
1 arm. 2
waiting
arms
on
and a bat.
Bat
went to 1 arm very quickly.
Yeah. And
back to like, hey, we got these kids coming up. You want to come to Fenway and talk to them?
Yeah. And the Corbin Burns pursuit turns out wasn't really much of a pursuit at all. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Boston Celtics back in action tonight. And we may have a little insight into what went wrong with them in Toronto. We'll get into that next.